Welcome to the Monkeys Fighting Robots podcast with Matthew Sardo.
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
Holy sh! They're actually monkeys fighting robots!
You can follow us on Twitter at monkeys_robots and on Instagram at monkeys fighting robots. Make sure to download and review our podcast from iTunes and Stitcher. And now, here's your host, Matt.
Welcome to the 132nd episode of the movie show by Monkeys Fighting Robots. Today is an exciting show. Kingsman: The Golden Circle comes out this week, and managing editor of Monkeys Fighting Robots is here to give us his fall movie preview. Larry Taylor is in his house. I'm your host, Matthew Sardo. I'm also the co-founder of MonkeysFightingRobots.com. If you like the show, subscribe on Blog Talk Radio and or drop us a few comments on the website. And in breaking news, the movie show is now sponsored by Uncanny Heroes in Tampa. Ivan Plaza, the co-owner of the place, is a great guy. He's a mainstay in the Tampa Bay comic book community. You should stop by this Saturday for Batman Day. Artists Jamie Jones, Elliot Fernandez, and Ozzy Fernandez will be there. Uncanny Heroes is located at 12904 North 56th Street in Temple Terrace. Check them out on the web at uncannyheroes.com and like them on Facebook at Uncanny Heroes Tampa. Support your local comic book store, people! Now it's time for some movie reviews! Movie reviews!
We're from the Kingsman Tailor's Shop in London. Maybe you've heard of us.
Today marks the beginning of a new age. Wait, I'm gonna show you. Say goodbye to the Kingsmen.
Kind of got a bit of a save the world situation here.
Welcome to Statesman.
As your American cousins, we'll be working side by side.
Let's get started.
We've got brains, skills, skipping rope.
It's a lasso.
Whatever. It's very American.
Yeah, it is.
Manners maketh man.
Do you know what that means?
I would have to say that I wasn't the biggest fan of the first Kingsman film. I was like, what is this? I don't know. I could never really get over Samuel L. Jackson's lisp in it. It just bothered me. It was so over the top. It was craziness. And then 22 Fast and the Furious movies later that were insane and whatever you want to call that franchise now. The Kingsman: The Golden Circle came out. And it's been a really boring summer. You know, August was just like a dead zone. Just a dead zone. And I don't really know what you call The Hitman's Bodyguard. We definitely know it's not good. And we had It, and it was a lot of fun and was really amped up. And you're like, oh my God, It is amazing. And we're like, well, how are we going to bounce back? And I guess we're just going to go in a completely different direction with The Kingsman: The Golden Circle. And I thoroughly enjoyed this film. I had a blast. It's what sequels and blockbusters and action and comic book movies should be. This is what it was. Anthony Composto, the editor of the comic section, He says that this is the best comic book franchise film. Like, just the way it's aesthetically filmed and how it goes in the universe and everything like that is like, this is the best that there is in the comic book universe of films. And I don't know if I agree with him, and I don't know if I disagree with him on this one, because they do a lot of really fun things in it, and then there's just insane goofball plot holes and CGI and robotic dogs in chaos. And again, since I'm not really familiar with the Kingsman comic book, I know Mark Millar, I know what to expect from him. Like, I have no expectations with this. So it's just a growing universe with me. One of the cool things with Mark Millar and his writing is you know that no one is safe. And that's good to walk into a superhero franchise with. I don't know if you call it a superhero franchise, but it's a comic book franchise. Because not knowing that anybody is safe, you're like, oh, there's weight and there's consequences and there's going to be emotion that goes along in this film. And that's kudos to Mark Millar and Dave Gibbons. You know, that's what they brought to the table. And then luckily Jane Goldman and Matthew Vaughn respect the chaos that Mark Millar brings to the table. I do think that the Golden Circle could have used some editing. Like, somebody could have came in and been like, listen, I'm going to take this film from your original 2 hours and 21 minutes, and I'm going to cut it down to 2 hours, or I'm going to cut it down to like 150. And I think that would have been a super tight film that wouldn't have had dead points. You know, films have dead points every once in a while, and that's where you're like, ah. And you're like, you know, if there was an editor that kind of just kept it pacing. Guardians of the Galaxy, the original first Guardians of the Galaxy, had probably like the best pacing and build up. And then the ending is whatever you want to say about the ending. But like, each scene was about 10 to 15 minutes long, and they hopped to a different scene. And so you never got used to anything. You're like, okay, and it just kept moving. And that's one of the best paced films that I've witnessed in the past 10 years. Reference wise, but the Golden Circle, I was like, it started off, I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is action. And then it's gonna, okay, next thing's going on. And this is going on. And then we had some amazing characters show up in it. Julianne Moore. Like, I don't know what crazy pill she is taking, but she is crazy and I love her. And just keep making more of her as Poppy. It's brilliant. But then it hits like a low point. There was like one adventure more than needed to be in it. And then also with Matthew Vaughn's direction, there's great action sequences and they're all intense and they're all the same. And that's the thing, is they're all the same. His stylistic choices are pretty awesome. But when you're like, you need to act like a DJ in an action movie and you need to kind of like build the audience up. And, you know, give them in the groove and keep the emotions rolling through the film. And then you get the climax scene. You're like, holy shit. Oh, my God. Ah! And then you like mellow out, you know, with the music as well. And what the problem is with Matthew Vaughn is that he shows you everything right away. And then he continues to show you the same exact thing over and over again, action sequence wise. And so I was like, OK, what is your next trick? And Matthew's like, hey, I don't have any more tricks. I showed you all the tricks right in the beginning. And I was like, well, you should have either held back a little bit. And this is tough. When you have a really good trick, you like want to keep doing the trick over and over again. But with the fight scenes, I think they just somebody needed to come in and be like, okay, I saw this fight scene. Now I'm seeing it again. Now I'm seeing it again, seeing it again, seeing it again. And it's really good, but when you're seeing it again and again, it gets boring. Not for lack of quality, but just for like aesthetically. You know, it's the same exact fight scene. And I think you need to just bring it back and try to be more creative with those fight scenes for a third film if you're going to do that. Like, okay, that one stylistic choice that you have right now, it's pretty awesome. But then like just change it up, bring it out a little bit, you know, with what you're doing there. And then, like, when I give the DJ analogy, the fights just kept being the same. So there was no, like, buildup. Like, there's an opening scene, and Eggsy fights a guy. And then at the end of the film, he fights the same guy. And then there's robotic dogs. And they don't fight the robotic dogs, because there's two of them. They fight one at a time. So it's like you go through two dog fights. And then there's the end of the film, and Eggsy fights a similar villain to the first guy he fights in the film. And you're like, okay, how are they going to, like, escalate the battle? And there was no escalation. So that was a little flaw to it. But again, I still had lots of fun, and there's a lot of witty jokes. And the crowd was laughing so much that I couldn't get the second joke. And I'm a big fan of the second joke. Like, just, I get a little chuckle, and then give me the big punchline. And that's, so it's one of those films I'm going to have to see again, because I missed half the dialogue with the jokes. We kind of talked about the acting a little bit. Julianne Moore, amazing. Have tons of Julianne Moore. That's what we want to. Taron Egerton, that guy's growing on me. Like, my little kid's watching Sing, and he's the gorilla in it that's playing the piano. I think he's playing an Elton John song in that, too. Well, coincidences. The world is crazy. But he is definitely growing on me as an actor. I wasn't a big fan of him in the first one, but now, like, he's older, more mature. He's starting to carry that, like, charisma, that gravitas that you bring. Mark Strong is Merlin. Oh, man. Mark Strong. I can watch that. That guy, he has something. He has a little moxie in there. That's good. I thought Colin Firth was, like, one-handed behind his back. Like, there was something missing with Colin's first performance this time. And maybe it's just because he wanted to cash the check. I don't really know. There are some surprise casting in this. I was very happy to see Halle Berry show up. Channing Tatum's in it. It's a lost leader, guys. I'm sorry, lost leader. Jeff Bridges was not a lost leader. And then the biggest guy who steals the show is Pedro Pascal. He plays Whiskey. That's the name of his character. But I renamed him Burt Reynolds. Pedro Pascal steals the show as Burt Reynolds. And I put some photos on my Twitter, and those guys look exactly the same. Like, I don't know what we need to do, but Pedro needs to do Smokey and the Bandit Part 22, and we need to get the Bandit running through the United States, getting away from Smokey. That just needs to happen. Like, we need to do it right now. Overall, it's a fun film. You will not feel like you wasted your money. The special effects are okay. There was some robotic stuff in there. The robotic dogs, where I was like, some people feel like Elton John's performance in this is just over the top and nauseating. I thought it was brilliant, and I would like to see Elton John perform more in films. Comedically, the film is funny. You laugh your ass off. And like I said, you miss the jokes because you're laughing your ass off, and there's a second joke there. It just needs to be cut down. Like, you just should have been walking out of it like, bam, like, awesome. And that's, I got to talk to Matthew Vaughn. I got to talk to him and be like, listen, 220 action films. Stop that. Please stop that. You know, don't do that. It's just not needed. I gave it direction like a 3.5 out of 5. Writing is at like 3. I feel like they could have, like, dropped it down. Acting is a 4 out of 5. Cinematography, I gave it a nice 3.5. Overall, the film's like a 3.5 out of 5. It's a little above average. It's a little fun. There's a lot of great moments. Could have used some editing. If you go see The Golden Circle this weekend, please let me know what you think of the film and comment and give me your feedback on my review and what you're kind of looking for in reviews. Like, what are the aspects of films that you need to know so that you can make a good decision when you're at the kiosk and you're like, I want to go see blank. I do think The Kingsman would be good in IMAX, and I might go see it in IMAX to catch the rest of the jokes. All right, guys, I'll talk to you next week on the film reviews. Up next, we have Larry Taylor with his fall movie preview. On the line, on the big show, the big game, or whatever we're calling it these days, I have managing editor Larry Taylor to talk to me about the films he's interested in this fall, because Larry's more of the kind of like cerebral guy of Monkeys Fighting Robots, and he goes a little deeper with his thought process. So, Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
It is really good. I'm calling you because I want you to reassure me about Blade Runner 2049.
Man, I tell you, you asked me about my fall movie preview, and that was number one on my list and my most anticipated. What are you worried about?
I think it's just going to be shitastic. I don't know. I mean, like, we've had so many bad sequels and remakes and everything in there, and I know Blade Runner has this mythos that I don't even think the original film can live up to at this point in time. So how can a sequel live up to that mythos?
Well, I mean, I see your point there, but and the original one is a little wonky. I need to go back and watch it. I'm trying to think up an article about it right now, but this one, I mean, this is Denis Villeneuve. I mean, this is the new It director. It's got Ryan Gosling. It's got Jared Leto doing all of his method crap. I mean, this could be really good. I don't know. I think the trailers are sleek. It's got Roger Deakins doing cinematography. I'm interested to see how they tie Harrison Ford back into this whole thing, since Ridley Scott has said more than once that he was a replicant, meaning that he would, you know, have expired sometime after the original one. I don't know. I think it's got definite potential. It looks awesome.
No, I'm with you on all that. Everything that you said, I am completely with you. I think the film is going to look beautiful. I do like Ryan Gosling. I mean, if this is even has remotely anything associated with his acting from Drive, like, I will be fully in this. In my head, this is the character from Drive, just in the future.
Yeah, because, I mean, we haven't really, I think he had like one line in the trailer, but that's about all we've heard from the guy.
And I like Jared Leto. I mean, I think he is a good actor. I think he's batshit crazy too, but I think that's what makes good actors.
I think he's good. I think he's got a little bit of a negative cloud hanging over him after the whole Joker thing, but I think he's good. I think he was good before, and he can be good after. And Robin Wright's in this thing too, so... Man, this has got a lot of star power. It's got a great director behind it. Fingers crossed, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's all I got to do. Like, I'm very excited for this film, but I'm also, my expectations are so low on it that I don't get disappointed with some crazy big blockbuster shit-tastic fest that could possibly happen.
Yeah, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. At least I hope you will, because I am looking forward to it.
You know, another film, I'm just looking at October, and it just came out to me that I am like, I saw the first trailer and now I'm like super excited for, and I probably need to calm my nerves down on it, is The Snowman. I think that's going to be a brilliant film.
Yeah, I was looking at that just a minute ago. That first trailer is pretty great. It's kind of it's got the snow, but it's kind of a Seven throwback, and it's got Fassbender in the lead role. I mean, you don't need much else to sell me on it.
And I don't really, I mean, like, I don't think he's had, like, the leading action hero role. And I don't think that this is an action hero role, but, like, that he hasn't been a lead detective in a film before.
Yeah, he hasn't. It's either, kind of a darker indie drama, or it's, you know, X-Men and Assassin's Creed and stuff like that. He hasn't done a lot of in the middle. You know, he's always done these quirky indie movies, but this looks pretty exciting.
And you hit it right on the head. When I saw it, I was like, oh my God, I like felt all my fears from Seven come creeping back up my leg. And I was like, oh shit, I don't know if I can go through another experience like that.
Right. Hopefully it's more like Seven and less like the, 27 ripoffs we got in the late 90s, those Ashley Judd movies and stuff.
What else are you looking forward to?
Well, I'm interested to see how the autumn of Matt Damon, I don't want to put fall of Matt Damon on there, see how the autumn of Matt Damon goes, because he's got two pretty high-profile movies coming out. Suburbicon is getting kind of mixed, kind of meh reviews in the festival circuit right now. That's the George Clooney 50s dark comedy that's coming out. It's got Julianne Moore, of course, because it's the 50s. so she, well... And Clint is directing it. It looks promising, but early returns don't seem to be that great. And then on the other end, he has Downsizing, Alexander Payne's new movie, which looks pretty fantastic from those first trailers. It looks like it'll be a pretty good charmer. But I don't know. I think Damon's doing some interesting work this fall. We'll see how either one of them turn out, though.
With Suburbicon, I watched the first couple trailers. I think it's hitting on like an exposed nerve that we have now in the United States, like just from the trailer bits. And I think it has people want to see it, but they don't want to see it. So it's too real at this point, I think.
I think it might make white people a little uncomfortable. And I think that might be part of the reaction from the festival circuit. But, you know, we'll see. It could be a total mess. Sometimes that happens. Speaking of total mess and trailers, the one I'm really intrigued about, and I have really no idea what it's going to be, is this Murder on the Orient Express remake with Kenneth Branagh at the helm. That first trailer, I mean, it showcased all the characters in the movie. You know, we saw all the stars. And then it had that really crappy, what was that song at the end? Do you remember the trailer where it shows him in his mustache and it's got that Imagine Dragons song? I don't know. The trailer was a mess, is what I'm saying. And I don't know. I think this could be pretty good. The first one was good. The Agatha Christie novels are good. I don't know. What do you think about that one?
I'm surprised we haven't gotten more hype about this. The only hype I have about this film is Josh Gad trying to find out Star Wars rumors on the set of it. That's the only interaction that I have with it. But I'm a huge fan of Kenneth Branagh. I think he's a really good director.
Yeah, I think so too. And then that same weekend, it looks like Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri comes out. And that has been getting tremendous buzz. I think it was at the Toronto Film Festival. But that is the Frances McDormand foul mouth trying to find the her daughter's murderer movie. And it's got it's Martin McDonagh, who did Seven Psychopaths, In Bruges. So you kind of know what you're getting here. Plus, it's got Sam Rockwell back. I don't know. This is probably really high on my most anticipated for the fall. I think McDormand might have another shot at an Oscar here.
Yeah, it gets a limited release November 10th. I live in Tampa, so that probably means that we're not going to get it for a few weeks. It really stinks.
We're overlooking the biggest November release, right?
Thor! What?
Thor. Man, this looks great. It looks like a blast, man. It looks like everything that the first two Thor movies were not. And I think that's perfect. I think they got a perfect director for it. I can't wait.
I'm very excited for it. I love the color palette, the music. They've even talked about that, this is their Flash 2, based off the 80s Flash, that they're like, we're just going to go fucking crazy and stylistic, and that's what Thor was in the 60s comic book with the Rainbow Bridge and Jack Kirby's artwork, and it was all these bold, crazy colors. And I'm really glad that they went fantastical the set designs and everything.
Really bright, really like I said, really colorful. It looks great. Let's see, what else do we have coming?
November's going to be a battle because you have Thor coming out, and it, you know, I'm very excited. Thor comes out on my birthday, which is pretty amazing. But then 2 weeks later, you got Justice League, and who knows what you're going to get with that?
And it's up in the air. You know, they brought in Whedon to do the doctoring on it. I don't know. I don't even want to traverse those waters with the divisive crowds out there, but I don't know. I'm holding out hope for this one, just like I hold out hope for all the DC movies, because I love these characters, and I hope they can really put it all together and make an entertaining movie. But gosh, you just don't know. It's the most unknown. It's the most unknown proven quantity of the fall, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it's weird. And then December is going to be interesting. I'm very excited about Guillermo del Toro's film, The Shape of the Water. That's getting that's getting rave reviews. That comes out in early December, December 8th. Everybody's saying it's his best film since Pan's Labyrinth. And, you know, I just let that guy create and, don't judge. You know, that's where I'm kind of with him.
get out of his way, exactly. You know, and then, of course, we've got Star Wars. What else can you say about that?
Yeah.
You got The Last Jedi. You don't need much else. Let's see. What else?
I think Jumanji is going to be just a bomb. I'm not really excited about that at all.
I think we're on the, I don't want to say forever downturn, but I think we're in a little valley in The Rock's career right now. I think he kind of needs a reconfiguration, if you will, in his choice of movies. Maybe he should stop just doing everything. Yeah. Let's see.
Well, that's the thing is, when you're an action star, you just need to save the world. Like, you don't need to be like a comedic hero. You don't need to be, I'm trying to think of the other ones that, you know, like, you just save the world. Just find films that are like, oh, I have to save the world. Sweet. Sign me up. And just you ride that train as long as you can.
Right. It's Skyscraper, the one he's making now. I mean, it sounds like Die Hard in Asia. So, you know, that's what he needs to do.
Yeah. I'm kind of over the, I'm personally over The Rock. I don't think he lived up to the hype of the Stallones or the Arnolds or, you know, even the Bruce Willises of that time. Like, I think early on when he was doing stuff like The Rundown and Walking Tall, where they were like straight up like badass action movies, but he kind of, he's been all over the place since then.
Yeah. He's getting a little too family friendly, and he's just, frankly, the market's saturated with him right now. And that's just, I mean, that happens when you get famous. It happens time and time again. Maybe he can step back, and if we had a year, maybe 18 months, maybe even 2 years without a Rock movie, that might do the trick. And we can't forget, now that we're getting into December, we're getting into the awards-heavy movies. You got The Post coming out. You have a Steven Spielberg prestige war drama coming out, starring Tom Hanks, Meryl Streep, Bruce Greenwood, Carrie Coon. I don't know what else you need to know about this movie. Except that it's probably going to be a pretty heavy contender for an Academy Award or two or maybe 10 by the end of the year.
Yeah, there's been no trailers or no buzz about this film yet. I mean, like, I feel like you're supposed to start getting that stuff now.
Yeah, it seems a little behind. I don't know if he's caught up with Ready Player One stuff, but it seems like the marketing for this should start ramping up pretty soon. But speaking of timely movies, this one sure sounds pretty timely, even though it takes place in 1971. And then we've got the untitled Paul Thomas Anderson, Daniel Day-Lewis swan song movie, whatever that's going to be. It's taking place in the 50s, and it's about a dressmaker played by Daniel Day-Lewis. But I can guarantee you, knowing Paul Thomas Anderson, that it's going to be so much more than about the fashion industry. I don't even know what, you know, we don't even have a title for it yet, but I think everybody, all the film geeks out there are anticipating that one pretty heavily.
And this is Daniel Day-Lewis's last film, correct?
Yeah, I think he's going to go be a cobbler again. That's what he was doing when Scorsese talked him out of retirement for Gangs in New York, making shoes in Ireland, I believe.
And you...
So I guess he's do that. I don't know.
And then you were talking about the award titles and everything like that, and you skipped over a film, and I don't know why.
Which one?
Eli Roth's Death Wish.
Oh, well, if we're going to talk Razzies, we could talk Razzies right now, I guess. Oof. That movie didn't read the room, as I saw somewhere. That looks problematic from top to bottom, and I'm not one to get offended by things like that, but gosh, man, that looks, I don't know, that looks rough. It's hard to even watch that trailer without wincing.
I know that a lot of my friends in Chicago, because this is set in Chicago, they were like, oh, we need, you know, the Great White Hope is going to go save Chicago from gang violence. Is that what's going to happen?
Right. Yeah. Is this the personification of Trump through, you know, Bruce Willis's eyes? I don't know. He's going to go wipe the streets clean. That one looks like a bad decision from conception. There was already a Death Wish remake a few years ago that was pretty great. The James Wan one with Kevin Bacon. What was that one called?
I didn't know that was a Death Wish remake.
It is for. You know, better or worse, whatever. It's pretty close to the original Death Wish. Death Sentence. Yeah, that's what that was called. That's a great one. It super violent, but it also has a little more pathos than this one looks to have. You know,
if you look at when this first Death Wish trailer came out of the remake, I was like, I want to put it next to the original Death Wish trailer. And it's insane. When I was a kid working at a video store, there was already like Death Wish 22 at that point in time. So they had already like destroyed what the meaning of the original one was. But the original one is like pretty intense and pretty awesome at the same time.
It really is. It's really, it says something about violence, about, you know, losing your humanity and for the sake of revenge, you know, on and on. And then I think Canon Films got a hold of the franchise and started churning out really, really offensive sequels one after another.
Yeah, because 70s New York City wasn't the nicest place at the time.
Yeah. Yeah, they're trying to equate, you know, that old New York, that gritty New York with modern-day Chicago, and I don't know how accurate that is.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird that, you know, that they moved it to Chicago. There's a lot of things about it that are just off. But, I mean, Eli Roth is... The only aspect of it that I kind of remotely liked was like the social media aspect that they put in the film. Like if it's done well, it could be interesting that way. But I don't know if Eli Roth can do it well.
Yeah, I mean, he's here to shock you. So, I mean, if there's one thing that he can do well, it's shock people. But I don't know if that's enough to carry a whole movie. And we almost forgot The Disaster Artist. The making of The Room, the movie about the making of Tommy Wiseau's The Room with James Franco and all of his pals. I wasn't too excited about that. Have you ever seen The Room?
No, I have not seen The Room. I've only seen like trailers of it.
Right. And I've seen the You're Tearing Me Apart where they're on the roof throwing the football. And I think I got the gist of it without having to sit down and watch the whole thing. So I wasn't that pumped about this movie, but it's getting a ton of really good buzz, especially for James Franco's performance. So that's another one to keep an eye out with. I think that comes out beginning of December sometime, maybe December 1st.
I like James Franco, but I don't like his group of friends.
Yeah, I don't really think about what's his brother's name.
Dave Franco? Like, I don't think there is a brain cell in that kid.
Yeah, I don't know. James is, you know, he's weird. He definitely goes through phases. I don't know. He makes so many movies that just come and go and nobody ever even remembers they existed. But I don't know. Maybe this one will work.
I mean, he's good in The Deuce. The Deuce is out right now on HBO. I enjoy what he's doing there. That's a good series that just got picked up for season two. I'm intrigued by The Greatest Showman.
The Greatest Showman. What is that one?
That is the story of Barnum and Bailey with Wolverine, Hugh Jackman as P.T. Barnum.
Really? Yeah. I haven't seen anything about that.
A trailer came out probably around Comic-Con times.
Mm.
But when everything else was going on, but like it's a musical. That's what Hugh Jackman loves.
Okay. Okay, yeah. Okay, now it's coming back to me. I remember seeing glimpses of something about that.
And
P.T.
Barnum comes out on Christmas Day. It'll be interesting to see how that, like, how that delivers.
Yeah, I wonder if audiences are still receptive to big, sweeping musicals like that. I mean, I know La La Land was big last year, but that was a little different. That's not really these kind of... grand musicals. Last time he tried it was Les Mis, and that was terrible, but hopefully this one will be a little bit better.
And as great as La La Land was, I don't think it was like a monster box office smash. I mean, it made $151 million, I guess, for a low-budget film, for a $30 million film. That's pretty... And it made $445 million around the world. That's impressive for La La Land. I take everything I just said back.
it picked up a lot of momentum, I think, after the buzz, and it's got Gosling and Stone in it. You know, they're immediate box office draws.
And it actually came out. It had a limited release December 9th, but it had a wide release on Christmas. So we're releasing another musical on Christmas to compete against the Star Wars chaos. which I think is a good venue.
It's good counter programming for sure. I mean, that's, I think a big musical like that, there's no better spot on the calendar than Christmas Day. You know, that's a good one to get the family to, get your mom out to the movie theater and see a movie with you. I mean, I think that'll be totally fine. It shouldn't be affected by any Star Wars numbers because that's a totally different crowd.
Yeah. I mean, but Star Wars fans are getting old, but I guess it's the weekend. It's that box office weekend of a holiday. So, like, you're going to see multiple movies and, you know, you get to see your sci-fi thing. And then, like, you're like, oh, shit, I got to take my wife to the movies. Let's go see this film.
Here's a movie. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. To wrap this up, if you can only see one movie this fall, what's it going to be?
Oh, man, this sounds cliche. All right, it's going to be between two, and one of them we haven't even mentioned yet, and I totally forgot about it. Okay, Blade Runner 2049. I'm definitely seeing that one if I have my druthers. But second in line, I think, is The Killing of a Sacred Deer. And we didn't talk much about, or we didn't even mention this one yet, but this is the Yorgos Lanthimos, Colin Farrell, Nicole Kidman movie. It looks really dark and creepy and right up my alley. So I'm pretty jazzed to see that. The first trailer is super unnerving. And I really don't even know what it's entirely about, but it's getting a lot of good festival buzz. And like I said, Lanthimos is great. The Lobster is solid. Dogtooth is brilliant. And this looks to be, you know, right in line with those.
Interesting. For me, it has to be Star Wars. Like, I have, you know, I have enough in there. If I'm picking one movie, like, I need to finally see Luke Skywalker kick some ass. And if he doesn't, I'm going to be like the most upset person. I'm going to be like walking out of the theater, just kicking garbage cans over if Luke Skywalker is just mellow and doesn't fight anyone.
Yeah, I think he's going to have to, at least in the climactic battle. I was kind of compartmentalizing Star Wars because it's really just like an event. You know, it's less what movie are you going to go see this weekend than this is Star Wars Day. We're going to go see Star. You know, it's like going to a concert almost. Of, you know,
and you don't get that often anymore.
Right. Yeah. That's, I mean, it's hard to do with so many, you know, quote unquote big movies coming out, but Star Wars is head and shoulders above all the other franchises for sure.
Hi, Larry. I think we went through the whole entire fall and it's jam packed. And I think we're going to have a lot of good stuff to report on. Thank you for your time. And I can't wait to talk to you again.
All right, man. Thanks for having me.
Hey, Matt, we survived another episode. Oh, no.
Once again, there are several ways to continue the conversation after the show. Follow us on Twitter at @monkeys_robots. You can look at all our silly photos on Instagram at @monkeysfightingrobots. You can follow me on Twitter at @MatthewSardo. The biggest compliment we receive is when the subscriber number goes up on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a chance, we'd greatly appreciate a review of our show on iTunes. As always, the best way to listen to the show is on our website, monkeysfightingrobots.com. Yeah, I'm going to totally turn into a Muppet.
Okay, Lunchbox, let's try this again.
There are so many people that made the 132nd episode of the movie show a success. Special shout out to managing editor of Monkeys Fighting Robots, Larry Taylor, for giving us his fall movie preview. Jeff Shea is creator of our amazing intros and outros. Jessica Wynn designed the Monkeys Fighting Robots logo. Are you a monkey? Are you a robot? Uncanny Heroes is the sponsor of the show. Check them out. UncannyHeroes.com. Temple Terrace, Lakeland. Boom. Comics. Do it. To all my friends, family, and interweb, thank you very much for your support. I'm Matt Sardo. And this is Monkeys Fighting Robots.